With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
As a farmer's wife, I'm so proud to be sponsored by FarmDrop, the ethical grocer that delivers the farmer's market to your door. Cut out the supermarket with FarmDrop, who deliver food direct from over 250 local farmers, makers and bakers. Just like a supermarket, you choose a delivery slot and exactly the items you need. But unlike a supermarket, they source as locally as possible and pay producers properly. If you're in London, Bristol or Bath, visit farmdrop.com. It's a great way to shop, particularly in the build-up to Christmas. Quote the code BACKSTORY to get £25 off your first £50 order and to show your support for this podcast. Hello and welcome to The Backstory. I'm Claire Mutimer. And this is episode 8, Birth, Sweat and Trauma. Today, we're hearing from Lottie, a new mum with her 7-month-old daughter, Daisy. Lottie feels traumatised by the experiences she had in the course of having her daughter. Her case is unique, but then I suppose all cases of trauma are unique in their own way. Heads up, there are a few F-bombs and other swear words in this one, as well as blood and poo and trauma. Pretty understandable given the subject. But we just wanted to let you know.
This alarm went off and I looked at Mikey and just went, that poor woman, someone's having a really awful time. And then about 20 people rushed into the room and I was like, oh shit, it's for me.
I started out thinking that this episode was going to be about birth trauma, and in a way it is. Birth trauma was something that I was relatively unaware of, which, having had 3 kids, is pretty surprising. I read an article, as you do, and I wanted to find out more. So I spoke to lots of women who'd experienced birth trauma. And I found out that the causes of trauma are varied. It's not necessarily just about what you go through. It's how you experience what you go through. Some births are so difficult that most people would be traumatised by what happens. But in other cases, it might not be so much about what happens physically. Women might be traumatised by feeling a loss of control, a loss of dignity, maybe feeling that they weren't consulted or listened to, or even feeling that those around them were in some way hostile or unsupportive. Okay, so I'm just on my way to meet Lottie. Hi.
Nice to meet you.
And you. Okay, Lottie, can you tell me a little bit about the build-up to Daisy's birth?
Yeah, so I had a couple of miscarriages and then I got pregnant with her immediately after having a miscarriage, so didn't really know and was on holiday and just didn't feel like drinking anymore, which was unusual for me. I was anxious the whole time, but she was absolutely fine. And I went into labour 2 days before her due date. My waters broke when I was in bed. Like in a film, which I wasn't expecting. But we went straight up there and they said, you're less than 1 centimetre dilated, go back home. And then half an hour later, we turned around and went back because I couldn't cope. And they said, again, you're now 1 centimetre dilated. You're going to have to, we can't take up the beds. So you need to go and have a walk around or go home. So we decided to go home because we didn't live that far from the hospital. And I got in the car and I was hanging out of the window, like trying to rip the roof off. I was in so much pain. Got home, tried all sorts of things, but was just, it lasted 4 hours, I think, at home. And I was in absolute agony and was behaving like some kind of crazy banshee. I don't know who I was. I was like having baths and like ripping and throwing tables on the floor and grabbing ice lollies from the freezer, and just the whole house was absolute carnage. And after about 4 hours, Mikey was like, I can't cope with this. This feels quite bad. Let's go back to the hospital. And I got there and was 6 centimetres dilated, got straight on the gas and air. And they said, oh, you've done so well. You've got so far at home. Would you like a water birth? It'll be over in a couple of hours, probably. I was a bit high on the gas and air pipe and said yes, even though that was absolutely not what I wanted, really. I don't know why I said yes.
Had you had a sense of the sort of birth you wanted?
And I've always considered it to be quite a medical thing. So I wanted the hospital bed, all of the drugs that were available to me. I just thought that was my plan. It's just basically someone else is going to get the baby out and I'm just going to lie there and be in a bit of pain. So we tried the water. I don't really know why. I think I thought, oh, I'll be a hero. You know, it'll be out in a couple of hours and I will have done it naturally and then I'll be great. And it just didn't really work out like that. Everything slowed down from there. So I spent about, I think about 4 hours in the pool. And I bit the midwives because I was in a lot of pain. I remember I bit one on the boob and we felt awful about it. Eventually made them get, as I said, about, I think after about 4 hours, I was like, get me out of here. I need an epidural. I need it now. So they got me out of the pool. I wouldn't let them examine me. I had an epidural. It was the best thing that has, I think, ever happened in my entire life. I had a sandwich. Mikey went and moved the car. We just did some like life admin stuff, chatted to all the midwives, and I apologised for biting all of them.
Lottie and Mikey were both pretty relaxed. After a shaky start, things seemed to be going well. But then an obstetrician came into the room.
Listen, we can't find the baby's heartbeat. She needs to come out right now. Garbled loads of information at me that I didn't really take in about, we might give you a general anaesthetic, we might do a caesarean. Left Mikey in the room. They whisked me into theatre. I think we signed something. Can't really remember. Got into theatre. They put the monitors on and went, oh, there she is. She's just moved down the birth canal. And I wish at that point I'd said, hang on then, stop. What are you doing? But I didn't. And they let Mikey come in because everything was fine. And they said, we're going to give you 10 minutes to try and push the baby out. We're going to anaesthetise you so you'll feel nothing from nipple to toe. And then they said, if that doesn't work, we're going to give you general anaesthetic and someone's going to stand and hold your throat like this. And I remember thinking, not on my life is that happening. So I will get this baby out. And I couldn't feel anything. So I was pushing and then looking around at all of these doctors and going, am I doing it? Am I doing it? Am I having a poo? Is there a baby coming? What's happening? And then Mikey had a look and they said she'd turned. So they said, we're going to help you. And they had a Vontuse to turn her and then dragged her out with forceps. And Mikey said that he thought her head was going to come off. Like, it was so violent. There's no skin to skin. There was no like nice afterbirth experience. Whisked her off. I thought she was going to die. I don't really know why. So they sent Mikey into a different room with Daisy. They just gave her to him. And they were like, we need to work on your partner in a little room on his own with a baby going, what the fuck? How am I going to do this on my own?
Lottie needed to have a balloon inserted into her womb to stop the bleeding. Already dazed and confused, suddenly the 10 people in the room doubled to 20.
They handed over. So when they had an ultrasound machine on me, and when he handed over to the other doctor to put this balloon in, and then he went away.
It turned out to be a handover between the medical teams. But for Lottie, it made a scary situation even worse. Once the procedure was completed, she was admitted to a high dependency ward where she could be closely monitored.
And I was strapped up, like my legs had these compression pads on. My arms were like with drips and God knows what else. And I was like hooked up to loads of different things. I was knackered and really, really thirsty. And then Mikey came in with Daisy and obviously the relief on his face. And I thought, oh, everything's probably fine now. And then they gave her to me, but I couldn't really do anything with her because I was so like attached to all these different things. And I just thought, like, I can't do anything. And they said, she started crying and the midwife went, oh, she's hungry. So she needs to be fed. do you want to try? And I was like, I'm high as a kite. No, I can't think of anything worse. Again, another thing that I really regret, because they gave it a formula. I wish that the midwife had said, maybe it's just comfort that she needs. So maybe we can help you, and we, you know, we can lie her on you, and she can just like suck at your nipple for a minute. Because if I'd had help, then that would have happened. And then maybe I would have been able to breastfeed, because I couldn't. Sorry, I'm getting a bit upset.
It's all right. It's all right. There were a lot of things happening,
yeah.
And a lot of almost decisions being made that, because of the drugs you'd been given,
yeah.
You were off your face and you weren't really in the best frame of mind.
No.
To be able to make those decisions. Lottie and Daisy were in hospital for 5 days. Daisy had jaundice, so she had a little light pack on her, which meant that both mother and baby were hooked up to various devices.
Both of us were all just like connected to other things and not each other. It was really odd.
Eventually, after 5 days in hospital, they went home.
I think I asked for a scan because when I'd had a miscarriage, it was a missed miscarriage, and they had to go in and remove it, I can't remember what they call it.
Where they do the vacuum thing.
So they did that, and they had to do it twice because they didn't get it out. And something in my head was like, can you just check that everything's all right? And they said, oh, it's not routine. I was bleeding for weeks. The first couple of weeks of her life where I was really miserable. I just found it really hard and really emotional and had that, like, oh my God, what have I done? I was upset and anxious all the time. When she woke up in the middle of the night, I'd be pissed off about it, not like, oh, I just want to nurture my baby. I just cried a lot. And I felt like crap all the time. Like, I was drained. I couldn't sit down properly. I was bleeding. Kept going back to the doctors to say, I'm bleeding. And they were like, it's just lochia. It's fine. You know, it'll stop. And eventually the doctor said, I'm going to send you for a scan, but not urgently. And then I felt really relieved. So I took her out for lunch with some friends. And then I thought that I felt better. It was like the best I'd felt ever. Like, in the whole time that she'd been born, I felt like I'm independent. I've got on a tube with her. I've done all these things. I'm going to ace this now. It's going to be fine.
But just as Lottie started to feel better, things took an unexpected turn.
Then got up at 2 a.m. to feed her and heard a pop, a bit like my water's breaking, and thought, I've wet myself. That's weird. So I put her down in her sleepy head. I managed to do it quite calmly. Ran off to the toilet and thought, this is weird. Like, I could feel so much coming out. And I turned the light on and looked behind me, and it was blood, and it was everywhere. It was all over my sofa, all over the floor, all over the walls where I touched to feel my way to the bathroom, and I screamed for Mikey.
Lottie called for an ambulance. She sounded pretty calm, and initially they didn't seem to take it seriously because she was so calm. But as she became more and more panicked, they escalated it, and eventually the paramedics turned up. By the time they came, Lottie was lying on the floor.
And I was just like, this is it. I'm going to die. Like, nothing is ever going to stop this bleeding. I'm going to be dead soon.
It must have been. I mean, you say you were really calm, but how were you actually feeling? Were you just coming across as calm? How were you feeling inside?
I think it was when I felt weirdly numb, maybe. But it was when I could see it pouring out the bottom of my leggings, and I thought, this isn't stopping. It's not. And I wasn't in any pain. Nothing hurt. But I could just see this unreal amounts of blood. And then I thought, I'm going to die. And I thought, whatever I do, I can't let Mikey know that I'm going to die. So I thought I'd be really calm, but I was absolutely shitting myself.
Lottie was scanned, and it was discovered that she had retained some of the placenta, the very thing she'd previously been concerned about.
Like, loads of it.
How did they figure that out? Did they scan you?
Yeah, so they put me in the resus area, so I thought I was dying. And then they had a gynae doctor come and they scanned me and said, there's loads of it. It needs to come out. So they kept me in. And it wasn't until like 3 days later they did the operation. And then they did the suction vacuum thing again, and then the next day they discharged me. I asked for a scan, didn't get one, it's not routine. And I said, you need to, you know, you've left placenta in, I need to be scanned because I need to know. that it's all gone. They said, we'll set up a follow-up like in a couple of months' time.
While she'd been in hospital, Mikey had moved them into their new home.
So you had a newborn baby.
Yeah.
And there had been these repeated scares in terms of whether you were going to make it.
Yeah.
Mikey was looking after the baby, moving house.
I don't know how we did it. I don't think he knows how we did it. I think it was just like head down, get it done.
Mikey didn't want to talk for this podcast, and I get that. But think about what he was up against. His partner had already had a very difficult birth in which he thought he might lose her. He'd had to handle a new baby in the early days when Lottie was feeling out of it. He woke up to walls, floors and a partner covered in blood, had to cope with the baby again when Lottie went back into hospital, and then on top of it all, moving house. Oh, and Mikey's also a freelance worker, so you can forget about things like paid paternity leave. Hats off to this man. Lottie went to Manchester to see her mum and to give Mikey some time to catch up. But while she was there, she started to get flu-like symptoms.
But I just had this, I need to go back to London. I've got to go home. So I lied about how well I felt to my mum. Took Daisy, got on the train home. Mikey had to get on the train at Euston to like carry us off. Screaming and howling with this pain in my legs. I can't even describe it. Like I wanted, it was like my bones were growing, like trying to get out. It was so weird. It was like that all night. And then I got to the point where I was like, I can't wait anymore. So Mikey drove me to the urgent care place and I hung myself off the desk and I was like, I need to see someone. And this doctor came past and said, hey, he's an off-duty doctor. And he was like, is anyone going to help this girl who's sitting on the floor? I put me in a bed, tilted it backwards so my head was down and my legs were up. My temperature was astronomical. And then Mikey said that he'd overheard someone say that girl's got sepsis.
Lottie was admitted and treated for sepsis. But within about 12 hours, she started to experience a whole new set of symptoms.
And then the next thing I know, I have iller than I've ever been in my entire life. I know it's disgusting, but literally will not stop pooing. And they're like, you've got C. diff. It's really bad.
C. diff, Clostridium difficile, a bacterium infection that affects the bowel.
And I'd got it because in order to cure or to treat the sepsis, they'd had to give me every antibiotic.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Under the sun, because I didn't have time to figure out where the infection was because I would have died. They put me in an isolation room. Apparently they said to Mikey, it's really bad. You know, she might die.
Okay, let's recap. Difficult birth, new baby, retained placenta, lots of blood, repeated hospitalisation, house move, sepsis, C. diff.
So the sepsis was sorted out by this stage, but because of the antibiotics, you've got, is it Colostrum difficile or something?
Something like that.
And the symptoms
not to put too fine a point on it, you couldn't stop shitting yourself.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
I was in this isolation and they said basically like I'm highly contagious. No one could really come and visit me apart from Mikey would come and everyone had to wear gloves and an apron and like try not to touch me. And I wore nappies and other people wiped my bum like 80 times a day. It was awful. And obviously I couldn't see Daisy.
This must have been so hard not being able to see her daughter. Grandparents, friends and family helped out so that Mikey was able to visit. But Lottie was pretty out of it.
The first few days, I don't think I had any sense of what was going on. I was on about 7 different antibiotics and painkillers.
Lottie was in hospital for 12 days.
It feels like it was about 12 months.
12 days is a long time.
Every week was a milestone, you know, when they're tiny and it's like, she's 6 weeks, she's 7 weeks. Oh my God, and I missed it.
Eventually, she came home. How did it feel when you got home?
I wasn't really prepared. So I was still really, really ill. And I think there's an expectation, you know, when you come out of hospital that you're better. And I was not better. I was still taking antibiotics. I'd also, because I'd been lying down for so long, I'd put on 3 stone in retained fluid. I was wearing nappies. Mikey had to go and buy me like tenner lady pants, which was romantic. and I couldn't really do anything. I could hold her for a couple of minutes and then I have to give her to someone else to look after. Is she going to disturb that?
Well, I'm just more concerned. I don't want Daisy to be upset. Do you want to bring her in for a while and see?
Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah, let's see how she is when she's in here with us.
Hey, Bunny.
Oh, pardon you.
Oh, is that partly... Forgive me, I go into full-on clucky mode. She's gorgeous and she's very relaxed with her mum around. She settles really easily once Lottie picks her up. That bond is evident.
That's good. Is it sleepy buys time?
I was still in nappies and still couldn't stop shitting myself and having awful stomach cramps, feeling just horrendous and massive and really uncomfortable and exhausted. So after the excitement of seeing her again wore off, like after being home for about an hour, I just felt horrendous. Even though I was getting better, I just felt so unbelievably terrified that I was going to get it again and that this time it would kill me. I had this kind of, you know, all these things happened and I nearly died so many times. Like someone's just not got to finish the job.
So your anxiety was around the C. difficile coming back and kind of taking hold, but also around Daisy potentially catching it.
That, I had that fear as well as the fear that I would have sepsis again. Is that just that fear of either I'm going to die of C. diff or I'm going to die of sepsis, but I'm definitely going to die.
The type of trauma associated with birth trauma is post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Symptoms can include flashbacks, intrusive memories, anxiety, anger, irritability, and hypervigilance, in which a person feels on their guard at all times. Do you know whether Mikey has flashbacks?
No, I don't know. We don't really talk about it as much. I mean, we don't really talk about it as much from his point of view, which I think is a bit shit of me, probably. But I'm quite selfish about it, I think. I talk about it all the time and he probably doesn't want to hear about it. He probably just wants to move on.
But I just wonder whether actually you're not, you need to talk about how you feel first. You know, you're not in a position to feel able to support anybody else around this. It's not saying that he doesn't need the support as well, but maybe at the moment you're still working through everything that you need to work through.
I had a couple of therapy appointments for PTSD, but it was just not helpful at all.
What type of practitioner were they with?
I don't actually know. I was told that I would just see a trauma counsellor. And like I've had CBT in the past and I found that really helpful because it's like you go in with a problem and you think about what the worst case scenario is and then you figure out, like you can sort of break it down into manageable chunks and deal with your problem that way.
Apologies if you know this. CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy.
But then when the worst case scenario is that you die, like that's just way too big for me to deal with.
It sounds, from what you're saying, as though, like, the big thing at the centre of this, and I'm sorry if this, I know that this must be really upsetting, but what's coming from what you're saying is the big thing at the centre of this is that you really thought you were going to die. After a few weeks of being at home, Lottie was still extremely anxious about getting through the day with Daisy.
I went to the GP and said, I couldn't talk about anything without crying. Like, every time I spoke to anyone, I would just break down, especially like a medical professional. How are you? Tears, floods of them. She said, I think it would be really helpful for you if you had a birth debrief and you went back to the hospital and they would talk through why all these decisions were made. So you'd understand a little bit more about what happened, and that might make you feel able to process it a bit more.
I know that a debrief can be really important for some women. An opportunity to meet with members of the medical team to gain a clearer picture of what happened, why certain decisions were made, and to ask any questions.
So I thought that would be great. I was doing something proactive to fix it rather than just wallowing in the fear. And I just wanted, I wanted to be better for Daisy. I wanted, you know, we'd been through, and for Mikey as well, like, he'd had such a shit time. And, you know, it was supposed to be this magical, you know, it's our first baby and we're really in love and we're really happy and it should have been just this magical time, and it's just been the worst. And I was making it longer. And I think we both had this expectation that I'd be physically better and I'd be better.
You had a debrief. You were going to have a debrief, but what happened?
So this was actually a bit of a turning point for me. I was going to have a debrief and it was booked in. I went along anyway, but I didn't take Mikey. I left him at home with Daisy and just thought, I'll just come and see what it's about. And I sat in the waiting room for an hour and a half on a Monday morning, and this woman that I have never met before comes out and says, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. We couldn't find your notes. I'm just going to read over your notes and then we'll come in for a chat. And half an hour after that, still no sign of her. And I just thought, what the fuck am I doing? Something snapped in my head. I can't keep looking backwards.
Lottie chose not to wait and she walked out.
So I never arranged another debrief.
Does that feel like a positive step or does that feel like a screw you kind of step?
When I, at first, it felt like a really positive step, but the reason that I wanted to have a birth, like one of the reasons that I wanted to have a birth debrief, and I wanted someone to be accountable for what happened and the mistakes that were made, I wanted to do that so that other women might not have that experience. And I know a lot of the stuff, like the C. diff, couldn't really be helped. But the sepsis could have, the retained placenta could have. And I want someone to say, yeah, we fucked up, I'm sorry. But they wouldn't do that in a birth debrief because they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't, they'd be opening themselves up to lawsuits and stuff. When I raised it, when I was in the hospital, I asked questions quite a few times, like, why did this happen? Why did I have retained placenta? Why did I need a balloon in my womb? Why did I get sepsis? Why didn't you scan me? And then I'm like, this happens to lots of women. We're really sorry that you feel this has been a bad experience. We're really sorry that you feel like this, not we're really sorry that we had to put a balloon up there. It's like, we're really sorry that you feel a little bit traumatized by the fact that we did that, but we do it, you know, this happens to hundreds of women every day. This is normal. You know, I don't feel brave enough to ask those questions if the answer is going to be, well, we're sorry that you feel like that.
One of the things with other women that I've spoken to is for some women the trauma comes from what actually happened. And for other women, it comes from the way that people acted around what happened, that they maybe accept that what happened needed to happen, but the trauma was from how it was dealt with. And I just wonder for you, kind of where do you think it's coming from for you?
I think the trauma is coming from what happened. I'm pissed off about how it was handled and how things were communicated, but I'm not traumatized by that. I'm just a bit pissed off about it. I mean, all of the trauma and all of the flashbacks don't come from any particular person saying anything or doing anything or making a decision for me. It's just the lying in a green room on my own wearing a nappy. Actually, I do have one flashback, which is, but not because of anything bad that anyone did, it was just that one of the doctors was someone I went to school with, and I didn't really know. I think she'd been sort of looking at my case from afar and then remembered the name and thought, I'll go and see if it's her. And it was me. And I said to her, I was like, will you level with me? How bad is this? And she was like, it's really fucking serious. Because everyone else was giving you, just talking to me in numbers and things that I didn't understand. And she explained it. She was really calm and really helpful. And she was the only person. Sorry.
It's okay.
She was the only person that explained it in a way that I understood. Like, but just having her saying, like, you're up shit creek, but we're going to fix it. I think about that memory all the time.
And that was helpful.
It was, but it was just like a pivotal moment for me. I think someone that I think because I knew her from school. Sorry.
That's okay. Do you think there was something about the way that she was, because she knew you? Do you think it was like a touch of humanity?
I think that's exactly it, actually. I mean, she spoke to me like I was a real person.
Tell me how you're feeling now.
I feel better now. I feel like less anxious, but I'm still really angry about a lot of things. I think I'm a lot of my anger that I still have is still that I want, you know, the acknowledgement that they've done something wrong and that they've ruined so many things for me. I'm really angry because I'm not going to get pregnant ever again. You know, it's put me off so much that Daisy will probably be an only child. And that's never what I wanted.
This feels massive, and it was sort of the elephant in the room. Lottie's experience of having Daisy was so negative, so traumatic, that the thought of another child was just something she couldn't entertain.
I've always imagined myself having at least two children. They'd be close together in age and they'd play together and, you know, they'd probably fight all the time until they grow up.
Is that something that you knew really quickly? Is it a decision that you've kind of come to over time? Is it something that you feel absolutely certain about?
I came to that decision, both of us came to that decision very, very quickly. But then everyone's like, oh, you change, you know, everyone says that when you've had a baby, you'll change your mind. You'll probably change your mind. And I just think, fuck off to everyone who says that, because there's a little bit of me that thinks I'm being really selfish by not giving her a sibling. But, you know, I nearly died three times from one baby. And it's taken us a hell of a lot to get to where we are now. And we're really, really grateful. Daisy is absolutely amazing. And we kind of think, you know, just count your blessings. I'm trying to make peace with it. And I'm really lucky that we managed to get through this in one piece.
When people say to you, you might change your mind, does that feel like a sort of denial or minimising the level of trauma that you've been through?
It absolutely does, yeah. I feel like it's a bit ridiculous that I want everyone to acknowledge, and I want people to keep acknowledging just how awful our time was.
Lottie doesn't want reassurance or to be told that she'll feel differently in time. That feels like a denial of how she feels right now. Mm. Have you learnt anything about yourself?
I think I'm pretty hardcore now. I think I'm really resilient. And even though I feel really anxious, I look at Daisy and Mikey in our home and the fact that, like, we laugh all the time. We're really happy and we go and do things and we see friends. And, you know, sometimes some days are really, really shit and I feel like I'm a really terrible person. But then when we have those good days, I just think, I never thought that I would have these. And I'm amazing to get to a point where I can have these amazing days. And I mean, it's more Mikey's work than mine. You know, he's looked after me and gone through unspeakable things. Like, I don't know how he's done it, but the fact that we can do it together, it just makes me feel like we're some kind of, like, we're an unstoppable family and we can do anything now.
Thank you to Lottie and to all the other women who spoke to us while we were making this programme. This is our final episode of The Backstory for 2017, and we'll be taking a bit of a break. But keep us in your feed, because we'll be back in 2018 with Season 2. Before we break up, though, we'll be back on Friday in Backstory Backchat, where we'll be talking more about Lottie's experiences. So let us know your thoughts before then. We are The Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at The Backstory Pod on Twitter. Or you can email hello@thebackstorypodcast.co.uk. We read everything that comes in and we love hearing your thoughts. If you're heading to parties over the festive season, then look out for our backlash against small talk on our social media. Thanks so much for listening, and hopefully you'll hear us on Friday in the back chat. Otherwise, have a great Christmas and see you in 2018. Thanks again to our sponsors, FarmDrop. Go and check out their glorious website, farmdrop.com, and quote the code BACKSTORY to get £25 off your first £50 order and to show your support for this podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.